Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is My Wardrobe Malfunction. This is our 71st episode. If you've heard the other 70, we thank you and salute you. If not, then after you've listened to this, do try our episode with Nile Rodgers, or Jane Seymour, or Dame Jacqueline Wilson. There are so many great guests to choose from. Anyway, on to this week's episode. I know I'm a bit biased, but I really think this one is special. Like many of the guests on this podcast, I'd never met her before, but we bonded almost immediately, and I felt like I could talk to her about anything and everything, which I think you'll see we did. In the week of the Eurovision Song Contest, today's guest is the unforgettable 2018 winner, Netta Barzilai. So, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. Today, in the week of this year's Eurovision Song Contest, I am thrilled to be talking to the electronic plucker, style icon, and winner of the 2018 contest, Netta Barzilai. Did I say that properly, Barzilai?
You did. You did great.
Do you know, I am so excited to meet you for many reasons. But firstly, because I love Israel so much. It's one of my favorite countries in the world. I know you didn't grow up there when you were a teeny weeny little tot. But what's that game called, paddleboard, where you hear it in the morning?
Matkot.
That's the one. And you hear that click. It's like this paddleboard ball game. And it's such a wonderful sound. So, my darling, we're going to talk about Eurovision 2018. But I understand you're going to be with us in the UK on this year's show.
There's so many things to address, first of all. First of all, it's cool to hear that you've been to Israel. Israel is amazing. Second of all, I grew up in Nigeria, but I feel like Israel is like the main part of my identity. If I had to put it in a percentage, then I'm probably like 80% from here. But third, I am very, very excited to be joining the Eurovision performances this year. I am thrilled to the roof. This is a great honor. Eurovision called and I couldn't say no. And it's a big thing for me.
I'm not surprised. Because it's quite unusual for a past winner to go and perform. I mean, maybe last year's winner, but to have a winner from, 5 years ago? Isn't that quite unusual?
We're celebrating 5 years to that win. And it's like, you know, I did the Eurovision in Portugal. And I did the Eurovision in Israel. And then when Eurovision got canceled and it was COVID, then I was singing in the Eurovision that didn't happen. I did the 2020 Eurovision. So if you really look at it, I just missed two Eurovisions.
But you left such an impression. I mean, for so many reasons, but primarily because visually you're so strong and joyous, you're joyous, you're colourful, you're courageous in what you wear. And I'm sure people have said this to you before, but there's an element of Bjork, not only to your face and your features, but also in the kind of madness of your clothing choices.
I thank you so much. There's like a great, incredible team working with me on each and every piece that I wear, even when I'm sitting at home. This is like from Japan, and I am obsessed with this piece. I've been wearing it for 3 days. I think that celebrating my body that I live in and using it as a form of expression is something that I discovered only later in my life when I was 23 and 4. I think the stage really cured me. And I like making art with it. I fell in love with my presence, with how big it is when I enter a room. I no longer apologize for it as I was doing for so many years. And I just have fun with it. The more liberated I am from people's conceptions and takes about how do I supposed to look, the better I feel, the better I free myself from like
prejudice.
Sizes, you know, whenever you walk into like a clothing stores, there are sizes. And when the clerk, this is how you say that, when she asks you, what's your size? I don't have a size. I can fit in a top when it's size small and when it's size extra, extra large. I can fit into anything. It depends on what I want. It's really, I immediately go to the men's section. It's just like very creative for me. And I'm so free. But it's not like a permanent thing. I could go back if somebody important says the wrong thing at the wrong time. It's less easy to do that now, but it can happen.
So you do still have insecurities because you seem incredibly confident and at ease, as you say, with yourself. But do you ever feel insecure?
Well, basically, just like anyone. This year I wrote a song called I Love My Nails, which basically it was a quirky way for me because I don't like saying stuff the normal way. Instead of I love myself, I love my nails. And the verse is about a huge crush that I had on a boy who didn't really want me. And how after such a big process that I was having with myself and loving myself and like, oh my God, I'm winning. Nobody can take away what I really, really worked hard to earn. And then it's just like that, like it just goes. It just goes. And immediately you feel so small. I thought nobody can take my love for me away, but then it happened. And I needed a way to come back to myself. So I found like itty bits and crumbs to find a way back to me, like doing little stuff for myself and persuading yourself again that you are worthy.
Do you feel that now you have all this success and fame and you are a great talent, you have an incredible voice, a really unusual voice. Do you find that becomes less and less? So let's say your insecurity gets dented. Do you find it, you get back to your self-confidence more quickly now?
Interesting question. Does fame help your insecurities? The answer is no. It's just the volume of stuff. I think the volume of love is huge. And also the volume of hate is huge.
Yeah.
It's just, the volumes are up. The ways for me to find peace with myself is as difficult as it was when I was 16. It's just different volumes. I already know nobody can take away what I've seen. I've seen The Matrix. I've seen how when you think that you are the hottest thing in the room, then you're the hottest thing in the room. When you really believe so. And the energy that you attract all of a sudden is so different. You just have to believe that. And believing that is very, very difficult. It's a very difficult procedure to accomplish. But when you flood the world with this type of energy, then the world kind of changes into that direction. People are having less of a hard time to feel good about themselves, and then they send good energy outside. I really believe in that theory. And whenever I feel down, I remember it's fake, it's fake, it's fake, it's fake, it's fake. And this is like very important reminder. When I sit next to a friend and I feel less confident because she's less confident with herself. So she says tactless stuff like, how could you eat that? Like, I would never have courage to go like you. and then you feel all of a sudden like, oh, shit, I must have been doing something wrong. I must have been pushing people away. But this is her fears. One time I wore a cute diesel tank top, which was green, which I loved. And then my mother, she told me, Netta, your hands, your arms, could you wear something to cover them? Like, they're too big. But were they too big for her or for me? This was like the first moment when I really, really asked, why does her problems have to be my problems?
Is that the mum in her talking to her daughter? As like, darling, you really, you know, do you think you should go out wearing a pussy helmet? Do you think maybe you should cover up a bit? Rather than saying that actually doesn't suit you?
No. There were just like, I think, eating disorders passing from mother to daughter, from mother to daughter, from mother to daughter.
Okay, so you had an eating disorder, did you?
It's not an eating disorder. It's like, I take eating disorder as like a very severe term, but I had an unhealthy relationship with food and in the family for a very, very long time. Okay. Part of it is like really because of ignorance. We didn't know better. And really big part of it was because my grandma made my mom feel insecure about herself. So my mom made me feel insecure about myself. And so on and so on. It's like social norms. And yeah. I feel that...
Sorry, we've got the cats here. Shut up, cat. She's mooing in the background. And it's thundering as well outside. So sorry, everyone who's listening. There's a lot of kind of different sounds coming in. Sorry to interrupt you, Netta, but yeah.
No, it's okay.
I mean, do you think that's the cycle, isn't it? It's the cycle of behavior. Do you think you'll break that? If you have a daughter, do you think you'll break that cycle?
First of all, I really want to be a mom, but I hope so. But either way, I'm going to fuck up my kid. It's like, it's inevitable, right?
Well, it's not inevitable, but all you can do is your fucking best. You know, I say this, but I'm an alcoholic, all right? I'm in recovery. And my daughter, you know, my kids, they saw that, and especially the younger one. And there's no question that it's had an impact on her. But then, you know, and then I came out the other side and they witnessed that too. So there's the positive as well, because you know, when someone, they see flaws in you, you become more human, you become more accessible, you become more relatable. And then if you get past those things, then you become not a figure of admiration, because that's doesn't sound very humble. But it's like a survivor. It's about being a survivor. So I do believe fucking up is important. I think it's really important. And today, I don't think enough parents fuck up in front of their children, which makes them, they have no resilience whatsoever. So Netta, wow. When you have kids, you go ahead and fuck up.
Well, thank you for this permission. I will do my best, though. But yeah. I kind of want to take what you said about the kids not being resilient and not being too exposed, and like this era of PC and everybody needs to be so polite with each other and not really say the truth. I think there's like people are missing the point of a healthy conversation, because the point is not insulting anyone and keeping it all within. It's just like, you know, it's having a conversation out of love, out of pure love. And the base for everything is communication. To not communicate is not the answer for the fact that I am talking about, and I am not afraid to say that I love myself when I'm fat. I was afraid of that word. Whenever anyone say that word to me, I would shrivel up into myself, and I wanted to stop existing and to be in peace with this term, which is like, it's a title, which is true. And I'm okay with it and I love it. And I think if I wouldn't be free and I wouldn't talk about it as much and practice this as much, I wouldn't be able to be happy. And if people were careful, it wouldn't be fun to be around me.
Yeah, I so agree. It's like if you own your flaws or what you consider to be your flaws or what other people consider to be your fucking flaws, if you own them, you take the power out of them. It's weird because I've been thinking about this a lot recently because I wind the movie forward. How old are you? So 24 or something. You're like a child, aren't you?
I'm 30.
Are you really? She looks so young. You 30, really?
It's like natural collagen. It's fat.
Oh, my God. Okay, so wind the movie forward 30 years, and I am you. It's taken me 60 years of up and down, being on TV, career failure, la, 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 to come to where you are today and to have that authenticity about yourself. And it's such a relief, isn't it? So you, what you're doing and embracing yourself and your size, it's so powerful for young women of your age, obviously. And it's so much healthier. And it's that authenticity is what we're losing through people being too PC.
First of all, I totally hear that. And I just want to say that it's not being big or being fat that I promote. I promote not hating yourself.
Yeah.
This is the healthy thing.
Yes, you're right.
When you are at a place when you are compassionate and you forgive yourself, then you can be in a place where you can do healthy choices for yourself through, like for example, I look the way I am and I don't eat sugar for the past year, and I don't eat processed foods. I'm just envious of about my energy, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that it doesn't define you at all. You're so, you know, you're so much more.
Exactly.
So, like you were saying about when you walk into a clothes shop and you can put on a size small, you can put on, men's clothes, you can put on whatever you want, because you're not defined by that. And that's what emanates from you so strongly, is it's like you've got a voice, you've got a personality, you've got intelligence, you must have a sense of humor to be able to perform like you do.
Exactly.
And you know, those are the things you are.
In this Eurovision.
Yeah, what are you wearing? Will you tell us?
In the preparation, we chose a designer from London. He's very big, and it was a dream of mine to work with him for such a long time. And I've never worked actually with a designer from abroad. I only worked with designers from Israel. And for the design, we needed to scan my body in a special place, 360. And it was so...
I think I can work out who that is.
Yeah, you can?
Okay.
Start with... What letter does it start in?
I think he begins with G, his first name, and his second name, P.
I don't know.
So it's not Gareth Pugh.
No.
Okay.
Which is a bummer because I love it.
Are you allowed to say or not?
Maybe
you better
not. No, because it would obviously reveal what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's okay. Okay,
right.
I can't.
We have to keep shum.
But okay. We needed to scan my body in 360. And it was an experience for me because, when people ask me, when they want to take my photo, they're like, what's your size? And I said, all of my sides are my side. And then when I needed all of the sides, I needed to deal with it for a second. It's like, no, from the back. And then it's like, yes, I kind of like it. It's like, I needed to sit with it for a while. And then we needed to mold something from iron. And then we 3D printed it in Israel exactly to the fits of my body. And it's just ugh. It's divine. I can't wait. But
so
it was
excited.
also a thing to deal with.
And are you going to be performing a new song?
Well, it's a rendition of a great song from Liverpool. A few songs by special artists that performed a tribute to Liverpool. And I can't share. I just can't.
Okay.
I'm like, okay. I will be sued. I would lose so much money if I say something.
Okay, we're going to move on from that then. So, whereabouts do you live in Israel? Are you in Tel Aviv? Or?
Yes, we're currently in my apartment, which is all very, 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 very archy. Like, the ceiling is
beautiful. Are you in, where are you? Are you in Jaffa?
Yes,
you are.
I'm right by the sea.
At night, it looks like Hogwarts, and at morning, it looks like Santorini.
Yeah, it's so pretty. I love Jaffa. I have some friends who live in Jaffa, and I used, because I would go out to Israel and I'd spend like a month at a time there. I made so many friends.
No, it's like very, very Israeli friendly about your attitude.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You're very to the point.
Yeah.
And it's very Israeli.
But I love that. It's like going back to the whole fucking PC thing. That doesn't really exist in Israel, which is why I love that straight talking. You know where you stand immediately.
Exactly. But it's very difficult because I come from an Israeli place as an artist. I'm not ashamed of my accent. I really put words in Hebrew in my pop songs. I really play with this exotic place. The way that I sound, you know, I put something on TikTok, something that is, you know, everybody's doing braids here now because it's, you know, it's Israel. And it's like, you know, we take trends from other places. And all of a sudden I upload something to TikTok and then I discover that I'm culturally appropriating something. But I don't live in America, but I have to discover that something culturally inappropriate that is totally appropriate where I come from. It's like I bring into my surroundings the PC culture and people here do not understand.
It's
just, it isn't a global thing. I do regret putting braids that day.
But it must be hard to navigate that. You must have traveled a lot, so that helps. And your name is getting, you know, is going further afield. But to navigate that sort of global influence must be a continuous learning curve for you.
It's tiring to be so careful.
Mm.
Lizzo said it really well. I wish I could quote her well. But it's like to live in a world when you can cancel a girl when she just wanted to change.
Yeah.
And it's just like that. You can take away somebody's career just for like something really, really, really
small. Really, I think it's interesting because I asked my kids about this, and I said, "What worries you most about the future, thinking it would be, you know, global warming?" And they all say the sort of cancel culture. So you got to change that. You got to start changing that. I'll help you.
Ah.
It's like, you know, really. And I think you are to a certain degree, Netta. I think you are, because you are very individual in your expression, in the way you look, in, you know, the way you perform, the lyrics of your songs. I think you have a lot of that on your side. And, you know, it's kind of softly, softly, isn't it, as a spokesperson.
I believe I'm going to need the guts to have conversations. I feel sometimes I'm very brave to have some conversations, but sometimes I feel like a chicken not having some conversations that I really need to have.
But then I think if they're all reflected on yourself and they're talking about yourself, you can talk about yourself and then it be other people will identify with it. That I think could be, is a sort of way around it, especially for you in your position.
Might be, you know, a solution. You know,
it's your experience that you can talk about and then everyone else, you know, people will identify with parts of what you say.
Might be a solution. I wish that people just sit and talk. People don't talk. Okay. They just shame. They rather shame and rather like look for somebody to hate.
No, it's terrible. It really is. So, I mean, when you said you, because when you were younger, you said you were faced with fight or flight. You are a fighter, aren't you?
I became a fighter when I grew older, but when I was a kid and I needed to escape, I wrote a song called Playground Politica. It's my latest release. And it's when I came back from Nigeria was like a place We went to school with a girl from Japan and a girl from, and a boy named Richard from London, and a girl named Megan from Michigan, and a boy named Stone from Nigeria, and two girls from Namibia. And we just were in an international kind of class. Everybody was looking different, but everybody looks so different. So physical differences wasn't a thing. And when I came back to Israel to 40 white kids in a classroom, all of a sudden you discover you're the fat unibrowed kid with the accent, which is also very, very sensitive and very, very vulnerable. And when there's a weakness, then I didn't know how to deal with it. I was immediately rejected. And I was also very weird and very emotional about everything. You asked about fight or flight. So whenever there was like a break, I would run. I was a running fat girl. People called me like a rhino. Like in Hebrew, it kind of fits. So it was like, I was the rhinoceros kind of kid. I would just like run. Immediately, I would run to the swing. And whenever I am in motion, like when I'm in a car or when I'm on a swing or when I'm dancing, I can just zone out and like imagine myself in a different place. So I would run to the swing and I would just sit on it and swing forever. And people would scream, get that. And nothing existed. I was unstoppable. And that was like, if it was a fight or flight thing, then I would choose flight always that time. I couldn't face that. I couldn't deal with that when I was so young. Just a tip for parents dealing with kids that are not accepted in their schools. My parents did an amazing thing for me, and they sent me to places like small groups, like pottery class or like choir or like soccer team, wherever I have a chance, like a fresh start to communicate with people, with fresh people that has like no opinion on me, and just gain social confidence. And slowly, bit by bit, I gained social confidence by interacting with just fresh people in smaller groups. And I got just a tiny bit of love and a tiny bit of like ways to build my personality, which was amazing for me.
As the day winds down, don't let allergies disrupt your night. Add Aspire Allergy and Sinus. We're here to bring you peace and relief. Our expert team offers personalized allergy testing and advanced treatments so you can enjoy restful nights free from the struggles of congestion and discomfort. Make the evenings yours again. Visit AspireAllergy.com to schedule an appointment and experience a life where every breath is serene. Breathe easy. Sleep better. Aspire Allergy, your pathway to peaceful nights and brighter mornings. AspireAllergy.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But one of the things that happened when I grew up is I discovered that I have a very, very, very special musical talent. When I was in the first or second grade, I had an audition for a choir. And like it was like a test if you're like a low voice or a high voice. And I remember when I opened my mouth, I got like a turning head motion from all of the kids. And that was the moment where I realized that I got something. And like everybody was the pretty girl and I could sing. And it really helped me. Music for like a very long time was a vessel to bring people closer to me in good ways and bad ways. Like I gained popularity and friends and people, when there was like a campfire or whatever, I was the annoying girl with the guitar, but everybody would come and wanna take a part of it. when I became 18, I decided to take like a year off singing because I realized that I am intolerable as a person and I really need to build a personality and I really need to learn to love myself that everybody hated. Because nobody wanted me, then I kind of excluded myself from society. If I'm not, if I can't be a part of the club that you built, that I don't want to, that I'll build my own kind of club who includes just me, and I'm going to be not a social person. And when I became 18, I stated that as a fact. I want to become a social person. I want to be a part of a team. I want to be loved. And I want people to love me. And it was very hard. But here we are.
So was there a light bulb moment when you thought that? Was it literally when you turned 18? Or did this evolve?
In Israel, there's like, you have to go to the army. You just have to. If you don't, you go to jail.
Military service, yeah.
And I decided there's an option to take a year before the army where you volunteer. So I took a year and volunteered in Tiberias, which is a city near the Sea of Galilee. And I lived in a commune with 14 other artists.
What, a kibbutz, like a sort of musical kibbutz?
Almost, but just a tiny 5-bedroom apartment when you live in the middle of a very, very difficult city. Like very, very poor places. Mm. And I had a room with 6 guitars and in a school. And I teach guitar. But the more interesting part was the fact that I lived with 14 other people and all of them told me that I was intolerable.
In what way? Define that. How did they find you? Is that because you found yourself intolerable?
No.
As well? Okay, so how did they find you intolerable?
I got the affirmation because for so many years of being pushed out, I pushed myself away from, like, if everybody's going to paint some place, then I'm not going because I'm special. And I have my special food in the fridge because I'm special. I don't like your ideas. I like my own ideas and everybody needs to do my thing.
That's so interesting, though, because you're talking about a time when you were very vulnerable and you were just starting to come out of it. You said, you know, about yourself, I was intolerable. But weirdly, the way that is displaying itself is this almost like an ego, which by other people could be taken as ego.
Exactly.
And a lack of humility because, and I'm saying this as a recovering alcoholic because it's like, you know, that's one of the things. Well, I'm special. Of course I have to drink, you know, a bottle of wine and I have to drink another bottle of wine because I'm special and I'm different and you don't have problems like I do. So I really empathize with what you're saying. And that manifests itself as maybe a bit, like having a big ego. But it's so the reverse, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. When you isolate someone for so long, and when you're so deep into your loop that you feel like everybody wants to harm you and nobody understands you, it's just not the way. Yeah. When there's a bully, for example, the solution is not to isolate him. Just gonna make it worse.
You gotta hug them, dear bully.
I don't know what what's the solution. I don't know. Yeah. It's just communication and love.
But did you at that time? Did you use the way you dressed as a form of protection? So did you wear kind of all black, or did you wear heavy metal t-shirts, or did you, you know, have a biker jacket and Doc Martens? I mean, how did you dress at that time?
Kind of all of the above. I didn't pay attention to my body as like a part of me. I was denying it. I would dress like very basic, like black pants and black sweatshirt.
Bit like Louis Capaldi.
Maybe. I love him. When I was 22 and I was starting to perform, I started at open mics, and at first I needed my friends, but there was like a first time when I didn't need my friends to go, and I urged myself to go by myself, and it was kind of like a ritual, like every Sunday at 12 a.m., I would go
And sorry, is it 12 p.m. when it reached midnight?
No, 12 a.m. A.m. Yeah.
So I would go and I would participate in this open mics thing. And because nobody knew me and this like kind of fresh start, clean slate kind of thing, this is when I allowed myself to experiment with clothes. First of all, I started coming in my pajamas. Like, I want to feel the most comfortable that I am, that I want to on stage. Like, I built like kind of this character when I just eat fries out of people's tables and drink out of their beers and sing. Like, I practiced a lot of types of performances till I found where I feel the biggest and when the crowd gets like the best. And I just took like old women's dresses, which was like the finest. It was the most hipster, and it closed up to here, like the really expensive bohemian stuff. Mm-hmm. And I took them all and I make them so much shorter because I'm built very apple shaped and I have like very, very skinny legs. And I wanted to, like, every time I took my clothes to the seamstress, I really prayed really hard. I wish I would have somebody sewing clothes for me. I wish I would have the money one day to make it. And then everything just, it happened.
So how would you know, because people in this country, in the UK, will know you obviously from Eurovision and your little buns on the side of your head. There was something, it was kind of a bit Pippi Longstocking, this Scandinavian little girl character. And there was something quite childish about it. There was something, obviously it was very colourful. And like I said earlier, it was just joyful. How would you describe your style today? I mean, is there a marriage between onstage and offstage, or are they two separate things?
It's an interesting question. I allow myself a lot to be the six-year-old kid that I never was, I guess. Yeah. On stage with the big tutus and the buns. And I just feel something about playing with toys on stage,
yeah,
is something, yeah, very childish, and you discover stuff. It's like, it's less of a diva practice. Like, there's, yeah, dancers and you feel, bah! It's more like, oof, I mean, this magical wonderland, and like I touch stuff and like, it's like you're swimming. Sorry.
It's so true. It's like you are. It's like when watching you, that's exactly it. And that's why it's so joyful. It's like watching a kid in a toy shop.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And gosh, that's so interesting.
This is the experience that I have when I make music.
Mm.
There's some songs when I feel sexy and there's some songs where I feel enticing, but the moment when you hear a good beat, you just go like this, yes! Mm. And then it's just, it's inevitable. You have to dress like a child because it is, this is the feeling that you ignite in people and in yourself. I guess that's the answer to the way I dress.
Mm.
By the way, in Eurovision, this is not the type of thing that you might expect. I might be very sexy.
Oh, well, I can imagine it. I can absolutely imagine. You are really looking forward to this, I can tell.
I am.
Oh, a little coquettish. So, my darling, who are your style icons? It doesn't have to be anyone. I mean, Bjork must have been an influence for you. Or maybe you're too young to remember her.
So obviously, Bjork is like major for me. But it's more anime. It's more, yeah, anime kind of,
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Mugler and
And
Alon Livne, who's an Israeli designer, have all been around always, but I never looked at fashion because it didn't include me, so I pushed it away. So for such a long time, I like had such a like that I wasn't influenced by anything. This thing gave me hatred. What they did gave me hatred, and it made me hate myself
fashion industry made me hate myself. It made me go to the bathroom and throw up. Sorry. For a moment, I really saw it. I really saw all of the designers filtering in like plus size models and like great quantity. But now I see it less. And I'm kind of worried that we were used as a gimmick, which we're not. And that might be very insulting, because I really do believe that excluding people is just wrong for society, and it creates problems deeper than anybody could ever fix. It takes so long.
Would you ever think of starting your own line?
I would love that. If I would find a good partner, that I would love that.
I think that might be future for you. Now, my darling, have you had any major wardrobe malfunctions? She's got a good one. I can see it on her face. Netta's got a good one.
I like have two good ones.
Okay.
One of them might be too graphic, but one of them is very good.
We're going to have the graphic one too. We've been swearing the whole way through this. So we've got to have the graphic.
Listen, when I was in France, I was traveling to do a very big gay club performance. And like bigger than life kind of thing, the thing when you have to move and be feeling yourself the whole time. And I was, again, I'm apple-shaped, so I have nothing holding my pantyhose. When I put like a legging thing, then it's like, if I don't put like a high waist kind of like shaper, very gentle shaper that I put over them, then they just like, they can fall. So I went up to that stage and I started singing, and all of a sudden I'm playing my looper, and I feel it gently gliding down my hips and down to my knees. And then it became kind of like a belt holding my legs together, not allowing me to move. And I stood looking like a candle kind of standing. 40 minutes of me just like this and not really moving. Nobody could understand because it was transparent. But I was like, I was tied, and my stylist from afar didn't get it, and nobody could get it, but I was just standing there and nobody got what's wrong.
Oh my God, so you were completely restricted.
For somebody to save me. But so ever since then, it did happen. But then I don't let it damage the show. I'm open with my crowd and I'm telling them, listen, my pantyhose is tying me down and I'm going to do something. Please do not photograph this. and then I do it. People respect it. It's fun.
Brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. And is that the one that you... What's the graphic one?
It's not the
one,
graphic one. It's not the graphic one.
Come on.
Eurovision in Israel, I was wearing a Alon Livnez piece. It was a very, very, very tight and amazing leotard. Custom-made for my body. Really pinned and sewed exactly for me. And there was like ruffles through the back and down to the ass, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, it was all vinyl, and I couldn't sit, because if I would sit, I would ruin the ruffles. So they brought for me a special kind of chair, amazingly right next to me.
Okay, a wheelie chair, a chair with wheels. Yeah.
Chair with wheels.
Oh, it's like a saddle. It's like a massage chair.
Okay, so up until that moment of like months of preparing this garment, I didn't actually sit. So just before the performance, like a lot of people were standing around and everybody was so excited, like 50 dancers, everybody standing. And I'm like, okay, we have like 5 minutes until we go, so I will sit. And then I sat. And then there was like a huge scream. And everybody was lifting me up, asking me what happened. And I'm whispering to my stylist. And then he goes down.
Sorry, I don't understand. Is that like little finger meant to be a tampon?
A pin, like a needle.
Oh, a pin in your bum?
Not in my bum.
Front bottom. A pin in your front bottom. Oh my God, like a little instant piercing.
It was like a beam of light. And then he sees that needle stuck in my, you know. And then he just pulls it out and I start weeping. I start weeping. I literally got circumcised. It was like, it was terrible. It was terrible. Oh. Sorry for everybody.
Oh, we love that. We love that. Oh my God, Netta, you are the best. That is, oh God, my eyes are watering at the thought of that. Oh my God. So let's go from the most discomfort you've ever had in your life. What would you consider to be your comfort blanket? Something that you always, I suspect it might be the sweatshirt you're wearing now that you haven't taken off for 3 days and I can smell from here. Okay, so could it be that?
My most comfortable thing to wear? Probably a big, gigantic, Billie Eilish-y sweatshirt.
Oh.
I just feel very small in them. I like also very tight clothing when appropriate. I guess it's appropriate whenever. But like a big, comfy sweatshirt.
Nice.
You know, this kind of like fantasy of like boyfriend sweatshirt?
Mm-hmm.
When you wake up after like a night of... Like, I would never fit in my man's... Like,
I can't either.
For me to like fit small, very skinnily into like something very, very big. So I, whenever I have these things, I like feel very coquette.
Yeah. Very kind of small and delicate inside this great big sweatshirt.
Yeah.
I can identify with that too.
Morning after shirts. This is how they call them.
Morning after shirts. That's the one. Okay. And then... You're going out somewhere or you're going to an event, okay? What would you consider to be your birthday suit? So like the thing that you've got that you can reach for and you're going to feel $1 million in. Obviously not the final dress.
Good to feel $1 million in that. Wow, it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure, but without the pin.
It was amazing with the pin too. It was an amazing experience. But I would feel $1 million in, I guess, like a corset mm-hmm. that really puts everything in kind of like a nice shape.
So going back to Thierry Mugler.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to work anywhere around his area.
Mm.
I don't like the skirts when they're tight in my belly because... Or fourth time, I'm out of shape. So I like them, I like the A shape.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like a corset and an A shape kind of skirt, black.
Yep.
And then like a kimono on top, just Ooh. Like off the shoulders.
Ooh.
Choker.
Oh.
Pearly diamonds.
Okay.
Like a really slick laced boot.
Okay. You're very specific, okay? So that it's not something you can just reach for out of your wardrobe no. by the sounds of it. No, that takes a lot of work, but that's what you enjoy, isn't it?
Good black skirt, good black corset, a kimono and a boot.
Yeah, that's your thing.
That's a classic. You would look good anyway.
Yeah, well, you would look good because you can carry that off. But you know what? I knew today it was going to be good to talk to you. I don't think it was going to be quite this good.
No, it wasn't. It was really
good. No, you're a true role model. You know, you're not only a performer, but genuinely, you are a true role model. And I salute you and I have a lot of respect for you, Netta. I think you're really amazing and I've loved talking to you and I wish you all the best at the massive Eurovision event. And I can't wait to watch you on the TV.
This was so intelligent and fun and so loose. Thank you for this. I don't get to do this often.
I'm sure our paths will meet again. And meanwhile, I send you loads and loads of love.
Thank you so much. This was beyond any expectations that I had from an interview. I thank you for bringing out the best in yourself and in me.
Wow. What a woman. What an inspiration. And what a wardrobe malfunction. Oh my God. I can't wait to see her performance at Eurovision this weekend. Speaking of music, here's Destino by Duo. Fantastic. Destino is available now on all streaming platforms, and you can find Duo's album of the same name at duoguitarmusic.com and follow them at Duo Guitar Music. And you can find Netta at Netta Barzi on Insta, Facebook and Twitter, and at Netta on TikTok. Finally, you can find us at My Ward Mal on our socials, on our website at mywardmal.com. And of course, subscribe, rate, and review us on your chosen podcast platform. All the links you need are in our show notes. That's it. Thanks so much again to Netta, to Duo, and of course to you for listening. We'll catch up soon. Until then, my wardrobe is officially closed.
Hold up. Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.